Deezer Originals.
Now, it's time for Strong and Stable.
Strong and Stable, 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 Strong and Stable.
Hello and welcome to Strong and Stable, the podcast that is to political commentary what Ryanair is to customer service. I'm James O'Brien and this has been the week that's seen Wayne Rooney found guilty of drink driving and sentenced to community service, or being forced to play for England again, as it's sometimes known. It's the week that Jeremy Corbyn spoke Spanish at a party to confuse Piers Morgan. They have parties to confuse Piers Morgan. Where was my invitation? And, of course, the week that doctors warned that Nerf guns can cause serious eye injuries. Sold, of course, as a bit of a jolly, harmless fun, but actually capable of causing irreversible damage. Nerf guns are very much the Brexit of the toy world. But more about Brexit later. Let's meet this week's guests. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by a trio of comedians. You can insert your own Johnson, Davis and Fox gag here. But they are Mr. Mark Steele. Mark, of course, is a Crystal Palace fan, so I won't blame him if he's expecting to be sacked after just four jokes today and replaced by Jim Davidson. Tiff Stevenson has appeared in the show People Just Do Nothing, which many thought was a documentary about the Brexit negotiations. She also appeared on Show Me the Funny, which was definitely a show about the Brexit negotiations. And finally, Josh Widdicombe. Josh once worked as a contributor to Dora the Explorer magazine, so is really having to dumb down today. Presumably, Josh, you weren't a model for Dora herself, as she's too tall.
Bit offensive.
Thank you. Now, into this week's hot topics, and there's none hotter than, well, it would be remiss of us, or rather nobis remissus esset, not to kick off with Boris Johnson, whose leadership bid this week could not have been more blatant if he wrote it on the side of a bus. One of the points in Boris's 10-point plan for a successful Brexit was, Brexit will be a success. No, really. Presumably, his other points included the sky will be blue, the grass will be green, and mine's a gin and tonic. He then repeated the million-dollar question, I beg your pardon, the £350 million lie, but has since denied that he misused statistics and threatened to give anyone who says otherwise a bunch of sixes. It is said that Boris believes Brexit negotiations will fail and end up with Theresa May being humiliated, which sounds implausible because how can you humiliate someone who has already thrown away her party majority, given £1 billion to the DUP and picked you as Foreign Secretary? So let's begin with Boris. It's deja vu all over again. Mark Steele, what do you think that he's actually up to?
Oh, I don't know. It's just hilarious, though, isn't it? Because they're so nakedly clueless. It's brilliant. And you sort of think I bet they do know what they're doing, really. But then the odd moments when you watch them, and like that David Davis, he slouches in Parliament, doesn't he, on this sort of thing, goes, oh, I don't know, it's going to be sort of done at some point. Yes. There'll be a deal. And they make up all this stuff about, they have to just go back to the rhetoric and no long now we're free, no longer do we have to iron our spring onions and stuff like this. At last we're free to do deals with countries as yet undiscovered under the sea. And
there was very much a sense that they were in on a secret that we didn't know, and that sense is dissipating quite quickly.
Yeah, completely. They really, really, and I think I wrote this in my column, it just looks like they do look, because they say, it's quite easy.
Yeah, one of them said, a cup of tea, we're doing over a cup of tea in an afternoon.
I thought, in a way it is, because you're so clueless. It'd be like if I had to be at a meeting of a Formula One team that was designing a new engine, it would be quite easy, because I'd just sort of occasionally go, what's that then? I don't know, and then carry on reading Viz magazine, and it would be really easy. And they're like that, and I just think all the foreigners are going, you haven't even looked at this, have you? You haven't looked at the papers. No, we haven't even. We're not even that, mate.
I don't think he knows how to. I don't think he's got any idea how to secure any deal. David Davis is the only person who could go into WH Smith's, buy a Telegraph and fail to get a free bottle of Evian. That is how bad he is at securing a deal. I think the Boris thing was kind of, let's be honest, I didn't read it. It was 4,000 words.
No, it was a very long article.
Skimmed it, mate.
You only needed the 10 points, one of which genuinely was Brexit will be a success. And this is the point at which you think, well, how can everybody not agree that he's...
Is he just... He's Buggins' turn, isn't it? He literally just thinks, well, it's just going to be my go now.
I mean, and he thinks he's been really clever and played a long game. I think that's what Boris has done. Because they made such a mess of it. It was like the men made a mess and then they turned around and went, you're a woman, clean it up. and I think he thinks that he's played a really smart long game. But he's been disastrous at every role he's taken on. Like the mess he left as Mayor of London and now as Foreign Secretary. It's not exactly...
that was another one.
Twice.
But he's just like gaslighting a whole nation.
Do you think so? I mean, that's again. Quite sinister. That's when the laughing should stop.
Do you think he's still popular, though?
It's a good question.
No,
I don't think he is. I genuinely think... I think this weekend might have... This article might have kind of tipped it over. Because you'd go... You know, like, there's this... Is he pretending to be this guy? He is so nakedly ambitious now. It's not even a debate.
Yeah, well, the slagging of the BBC, where he sort of accuses the media of unfair bias, and then he goes, he blames it. He blames it on like Barack, and then he says the BBC were unfair towards Remain. And you go, the BBC that have put you on, Have I Got News For You? I don't even know how many times he's been on that show.
Oh, he's on everything. He's probably now he commentates on the snooker and all sorts.
Yeah, he's going to turn up doing people's best man speeches.
Location, location, location. What's this place? You're getting cheaper than this, aren't you?
It would be a good episode of Naked Attraction, though, as the wall comes up to reveal not Boris Johnson.
He doesn't need to be popular across the country to become leader of the Conservative Party. And if he becomes leader of the Conservative Party, he could conceivably become Prime Minister. Mm. So it's about... Do you think he was worried by Jacob Rees-Mogg? I mean, the idea that someone else, another PG Woodhouse tribute...
Oh, he's trying to out-mental him.
Well, I think that might be it, because the people that like Rees-Mogg would historically be the people that had little pictures of Boris Johnson on their fridge.
I mean, at least... I can't believe I'm going to say this, but at least Boris didn't call food banks uplifting.
No.
I mean, this is where we're at, where... And actually, people just defending Rees-Mogg now, going, well, he's allowed his religious beliefs. He's allowed to be anti-choice, anti-abortion. And why is it only ever really disgusting men that are anti-choice? Is it because that's the only way they're going to spread their genes? as if it's through force? I mean, he's such a repugnant man that actually Boris does look nicer.
Yeah, I'd quite look forward to Boris Johnson v Jacob Rees-Mogg, where Boris Johnson is the Bernie Sanders of the runoff. Oh, that would be quite insane situation. I think the thing with Boris, we had Boris on The Last Leg a few years ago, and the most telling thing I've ever seen is when we came back from the break, just before we came back from the break, he looked at himself in the monitor and just messed his hair up more.
Paul told me that about Have I Got News For You. He said exactly the same thing. The same thing. He was all done and everything. Exactly. Just as he was about to... with the hair.
He's not Milton Jones. He's not allowed to do that.
But he also does the thing...
Does he untie his shoelaces as well? Because I wouldn't be surprised.
Put it past him, but he does the thing when he gets on there and pretends he doesn't know where he is, which he's done on like three or four different occasions and reads the room wrong sometimes. And they're quite offended that he doesn't know where he is. But of course, it plays into this buffoonish exterior that he cultivates with incredible care. But this Boris story was basically him trying to get away from the burning building that he set fire to and trying to be as far away as possible by the time the fire engine arrived. But he can't resign.
With that hair, you don't want to be near fire.
He can't resign because that's retreating. That's betraying the cause. So we are in interesting times. I'll put the last word on this to a tweet that came out on the story this week. If you ask me, Boris Johnson is a deeply implausible politician with a ludicrous image who is clearly unfit for high ministerial office, tweeted Lord Buckethead. Pretty close to definitive.
Strong and stable.
So it does seem, of course, and Boris leads neatly into this question, that there are lies, damned lies, and Boris Johnson statistics. Indeed, they say that Boris Johnson lies so frequently his pants are now lined with asbestos. I'm sorry. Of course, politicians have always been economical with the truth, but now we hear outright lies from the leader of the free world, no less. What do we do when our politicians, Josh, are the ones actually spreading the fake news? I feel sorry for comedians and satirists, actually, because it's like you're being trolled by reality.
Well, it's very difficult to parody a parody, isn't it? I think that feels the same with Donald Trump as well. You kind of get to that point where you go, it's just white noise, and you're kind of trying to make jokes about something that's so outlandish. You're going, do you know what? I'd love to go back to making jokes about the ERM or something.
The good old days.
The good old days.
Like, is it knowing now, just knowingly doing, because when the whole thing was sort of kicking off, I remember during Edinburgh with Kim Jong and Trump and the name calling, and then Trump coming out, and you know, first it was Fire and Fury, then it was Locked and Loaded, and I was like, is he just naming Jason Statham films? Is that what's happening? But you have to kind of think there's a knowingness to that, you know, of kind of going, well, while they concentrate on that, we can just get all the really nasty. Yeah. But what's the other choice? Not say anything, not call him out on, you know, his behaviour.
Tiff, I've had an almost existential crisis on showing people something that's not true, and them still insisting that it's true. This is the point when senior people, whether it's Trump or whether it's Boris Johnson or whether it's, you know, papers of record, like printing stuff that's demonstrably untrue, like the £350 million on the side of the bus,
yeah,
and then not changing their mind after.
Well,
still
there's no repercussions as well for the people who've lied in the first place. Like Boris and Nigel have not faced any repercussions for that lie, and so many. And I mean, surely
glad
that
you're on
must
first
be
name terms with them too.
Yeah. Bozzer and Nige.
Bozzer's
Nige and Tiffers. We all hang out together.
Happy days. Well, it's hard though, isn't it, when you've got, because when people are just using the facts to justify the positions that they hold anyway. So if your facts refute what they think, you know. So I remember this conversation over with a bloke who was in a pub. Honestly true. He said, I'll tell you what's them Kosovans, right? They come over and they undercut the British workers' wage, see? Because they come over, like hundreds of them, and they come over, they work for nothing. The bastards, they work for nothing. And then, you know, a British builder can't get a decent wage. I said, I don't think that's true, mate. That's not. I'm telling you, it's true. The bloody Kosovans, hundreds of them, they come over, they work for nothing, work for next to nothing. So we went on like this for a while. I said, it's not true, mate. All the thing. He says, I'm telling you it's true. He said, I know it's true because I employ the bastards.
Well, it's interesting when people talk that way about immigrants, because you go, well, you should talk that way about technology, you know, because it's the same with the self-service machines. They bring them over, don't they, from China. They don't speak our language. Loads of people have lost their jobs because of them. You know, it's the same.
At least they're not sending money back to China. That'd be the gravest offence.
We're in an era where flat earth people have conspiracy theorists have come
back. This is
out.
Actually this true, is, isn't it? This isn't a figure of speech.
Flat earth conspiracy theorists.
No, they do.
They, you know, we're sort of in an age where, like, the truth is just it's the edges have become fuzzy. It's moulding. It's post-truth, alternative facts, fake news, and it becomes impossible to know. I think the BBC did on April Fool's Day this year. I really noticed it. There were a few, not just the BBC, but a few websites and publications, and The Guardian, who did big fake front page news. And I was like, you can't do fake news stories like that in an era of fake news. Like, it's because people are already doing that, not for a joke. Yeah. I mean, I think with someone like Trump versus Nixon, when Watergate happened, you know,
I think it was Frost.
Huh? Frost Nixon.
Very different film.
I'd watch it though.
Michael Sheen's best role for me.
comparatively, when Watergate, when that sort of scandal broke, the politicians actually went, I cannot in good consciousness stand by. Whereas the Republicans haven't done that. They haven't sort of separated themselves from Trump in that way. And, you know, how much evidence is sort of stacking up against Trump that says there's interference with an election? Now, surely that would affect the outcome. And what happens then? I mean, it's unprecedented and unprecedented in both terms.
At the start, everyone was like, do you think he'll serve 4 years? And then we go, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt now that he's absolutely untouchable.
There's nothing he could say or do.
There's nothing he could say or do that wouldn't.
That's the most thing. I mean, he said that himself in the campaign. He could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and they'd still cheer.
And he's just trolling Hillary Clinton now. And it's like,
still,
you won.
And Obama.
You won.
Yeah. He's still trolling Obama as well. It's the strangest thing. But you're right. I like the Nixon comparison, because it was as if there was a line then, even if it was a buried line, and it was very hard to find the line, and you had to, you know, break into buildings and do amazing journalism and all sorts to work out where the line was. There's no line anymore. Because if there was a line, I mean, how could he not have crossed it?
Has that not been a bit sort of rosy about the past, though?
Well,
because he didn't
tell us, Mark.
Well, no, he didn't. I do recall. I recall an Eisenhower, indeed. I was met him, I believe, a couple of occasions. Nixon was caught telling all manner of lies, including setting up a burglary.
Yes.
And not only that, but that came on... Well, crucially, he'd lost in Vietnam. That was why there was a sort of... that's why Nixon was...
Vulnerable,
because he was sort of the man at the helm when America faced its one of its greatest ever sort of loss of esteem, wasn't it?
So what we need is Trump to lose the North Korean War.
And then you're finally...
Strong and stable.
Now it's time for us to go over to Italy, where Theresa May is just rebooting. Preparing to give her Florence address.
Hello. Can I start by saying it is an honour to talk to you today in Florence, a city which was once the financial capital of the world, but whose influence has since faded, much like London. I would speak in Italian, but my Italian is not very good and I would probably lose the majority of you very quickly, and not for the first time. I hope to be able to visit Michelangelo's David later. Utterly exposed, inflexible, and with an oversized head, I hear it is to be renamed Michelangelo's David Davis. In fact, I'm told some of the artefacts in the Uffizi Gallery are almost as ancient as Jacob Rees-Mogg's worldview, and worth nearly as much as a DUP minister. Since I announced that I would be making this speech, there has been much speculation about what I would say, mostly from people hoping I would resign. Sorry, Boris. The purpose of my speech is twofold. Firstly, I would like to provide you with an update on progress with the Brexit negotiations. But hey, beggars can't be choosers, which coincidentally is the motto of our negotiation team. Secondly, I want to underline the government's wish for a deep and special partnership with the European Union post-Brexit. We just don't want to give you any money for it. And I hope we will soon resolve the issue of the transition period, by which I mean the time between me sacking my old advisers and finding someone new to blame everything on. Thank you for listening. I'm off to test my new Henry VIII powers by calling into the Vatican on the way home and telling the Pope where to shove it. Ciao. Just one cornetto.
Many thanks, Prime Minister Jan Ravens, whose speech, of course, takes us nicely into our next topic, the current cabinet split over Brexit. Yes, Theresa May is trying to straddle Philip Hammond and Boris Johnson. I'm so sorry for putting that image in your head. By saying this week, I'm in charge, and denying that she's lost control of her ministers, which is the surest sign yet that she's not in charge and has lost control of her ministers. It's the political equivalent, if you like, of the chairman's vote of confidence in the football manager. Cabinet members like Johnson and Gove favour a Canada-style Brexit, while others like Philip Hammond and Amber Rudd reportedly prefer a Norway one. And then there's Ian Duncan Smith's extreme hard Brexit. A concept so dangerous and disturbing that even Ross Kemp won't make a show about it. Friends of Boris Johnson, meanwhile, say that he might well resign over a Swiss-style Brexit. So, you know, every cloud. Do we have actual ideas on what a good Brexit... Don't shake your head at me, Whittaker. What a good Brexit would... What now is the best case
scenario? Are you
saying,
do I have the answer that no one else has?
Yeah, I just want to know a theory. I mean,
what a good Brexit would be?
Yes.
Stay in the Champions League, but not in the Europa League.
Keep our Thursday.
The Eurovision. Strong. Take it. Keep it. But I want my Thursday nights free.
All right. Let's do it this way. Let's do it. I will offer you a Brexit, and you will, in a single line, one by one, tell me what it is.
Right.
So, Mark Steele, what's a Canada-style Brexit?
Oh, a Canada-style Brexit will be one where, I don't know, we play ice hockey instead of football.
Tiffany, Norway-style Brexit.
That's what Alex Salmond wanted, isn't it? Alex Salmond said he wanted a Norway-style Brexit, but they call him Alex Gravelax there.
That's Josh, Norway light.
Well, this is the problem. That I've only just learned that Norway isn't in the EU. I'm learning so much.
On the perfectly reasonable grounds that Norway it looks light. Like it's in the EU. It walks like it's in the EU.
That's Norway light.
Norway light is Denmark. Why don't we just deal them into two piles, and then we can have what we want with half of them, and they can have what they want with the other half, and you shuffle them up so that you know, it's a fair deal.
See, mere moments ago, you were mocking the idea that you might have the answer that's eluded everybody else. Okay.
Imagine the excitement as they did that live on TV, revealed what we'd been dealt.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh, like with the when they do the lotto.
The draw.
You just take the balls out and it says tobacco.
And it could all be in boxes and hosted by Noel Edmonds.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, right, what, and there'd be on the little things, like on one side,
exactly.
Things like dates, and then on the other side, like cars and shit.
So I think
Luxembourg's got Wiltshire.
And so you highlight the problem with Josh's plan, which is that it isn't two.
Luxembourg's smaller than Wiltshire.
They'd get 27's worth of cards, and we'd get one's worth, wouldn't
God.
We? This is the point the negotiators have also missed.
No.
There's 27 of them, and there's only one of us.
Right.
And they're acting in the interest of... But anyway, while you're on form, Josh, Swiss-style Brexit.
This is the problem. I keep finding out these countries aren't in the EU. Swiss. I don't know.
They pay some money.
They pay some money.
Like a single market member. But
and then they hide it from the Germans.
Yeah, is that money gold and got suspiciously...
They hide it for the Germans, I think, historically. And then they can sell
in and
out. I
mean, who cares about history? Come on, James. It's a podcast.
No, you're quite right.
The terrible thing is this is pretty much the same as the discussions in the cabinet.
Yeah, apart from we've got more notes.
I think this is true. I increasingly think this is actually true. And that's why I guess that explains the take us back
to the
beginning.
That is exactly what's happening. David Davis is going, is Norway not in the EU?
That's true.
Isn't it? What about Rwanda?
They said that we can start doing deals the minute that the vote has happened. The minute the referendum or the minute Article 50 is triggered, Fox and Davis both said we can start doing deals. And I said, no, you legally and absolutely categorically can't. What's your job title again? Brexit. Oh, shit.
The brilliant one was, this is a joke I've been doing, so I'm not going to try and pretend I'm just thinking of it, but it was the one that said, I think it was David Davis, I think, who said that we'll get a better deal from the EU once we're not a member. Right, is that how membership works? You get a better deal. So if you go to the snooker club, can I come in? Are you a member? Not in the slightest. Then use all our facilities. Here's the chalk. This is Cindy. She'll give you a massage. Just give her a whistle. Can I come in? Are you a member? Yes. Piss off! Bring a fully paid up card. Out, you cheap bastard. Out! Oh, sorry, sir.
Oh, God.
Who's Cindy that gives massages at the snooker club? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, just in Croydon.
The other one, someone tweeted that it's like, I'm going to leave Netflix. And I'm going to renegotiate my own deal with every studio in the country. And again, they come back. I see it a lot on Twitter. I'm exposed to it more than most. And they come back and start trying to argue that point as well. As, oh, no, I think you'll find that Netflix actually has.
I used Netflix when the vote came up, when the referendum happened. I was like, I don't think we should have been given a vote because I can barely rate a film on Netflix. You cannot leave big, important... I mean, this is what we pay them to do. Why aren't they doing what we pay them to
do? If there's so many types of Brexit...
Yeah.
We should have split the vote. So it was which one do you want?
Like PR.
It's 52%.
What's the extreme?
It's 52%. Once you split it up, it should have been no, Swiss, Norwegian,
Romania.
Yeah, but that's why the rhetoric becomes the will of the people. Because the only alternative to saying, no, we voted for this, the will of the people. The only alternative is to say, well, actually, you can't find two leavers now who'll agree on what they voted for.
So what's the extreme hard Brexit? Apart from sounding like something on the stool chart. That sells us out.
Just treated like a third country following World Trade Organization tariffs.
That's not having any deal at all.
Nothing.
No deal.
That's what's going to happen.
Push away from the mainland of France. Right. Like, you know, when you're on a Lilo and you push away from the side.
They get some tugs. Yeah. Some tugs would appear from Brussels. Tow us slightly closer to America.
Put a cork in that tunnel.
That's what they're going to do. Brick it up.
It's strong. And stable.
And now it's time to go over to our special correspondent, Jonathan Pye, who this week went to the Lib Dem conference so that we didn't have to. Thank you, Jonathan.
I'm here at the Lib Dem conference where Vince Cable has just finished his first conference speech as leader. Here are a few of the highlights. Bloody hell, this is depressing. Isn't it? I mean, the Lib Dem conference used to be the one to go to. It was the one you wanted. It was party time, especially under Charles Kennedy. We never went to bed. Full of students. Well, they've all fucked off now. Can't imagine why. I mean, this feels like a wake. It's like they're mourning. It's like they're mourning, I don't know, purpose. They're certainly not mourning, what's his name? Was it Tim Farron? Was it Farron or Fallon? I can never remember his name. And now, of course, I don't have to. Half the conference looks suicidal and the rest are apparently on a different planet. I mean, I think they've all gone a bit loopy. Vince Cable says his job is to try and become Prime Minister. I mean, how the fuck are you going to do that? Join Labour? Start from the bottom, making the tea, work his way up, and who knows, in 20 years, when he's 108... I mean, even he looked embarrassed saying that in his speech. They were applauding, but in that way that a studio audience applauds because they're told to. I mean, I suppose it's possible he could do it. If Donald Orange Sack of Minge Trump is in a position to lecture the UN about world affairs, then, you know, Vince Cable could be Prime Minister. A world where a Nobel Peace Prize winner is turning a blind eye to ethnic cleansing is surely a world where Vince Cable could become Prime Minister. Anyway, as well as becoming Prime Minister, he wants another referendum on the terms of Brexit. I mean, have they gone mental? That's quite a complicated thing, the terms of Brexit. You know, the last referendum question was pretty simple, and that didn't exactly go to plan. And the last referendum the Lib Dems called for was to change to the alternative vote system. You remember that? A system which anyone who bothers to look at how it actually works will in about 30 seconds concede is a vastly fairer way of, well, fucking voting. And yet, asked what they prefer, the electorate decided, fuck's sake, they can't even get a vote about a vote right. Stupid twats. Let's leave the referendums alone for a bit, yeah? Just concentrate on something simpler, Vince, like, you know, becoming Prime Minister or time travel. Yeah. Well, the speech was well received, so let's talk to some of the delegates and get a
And thank you, Jonathan Pye. Yes, the Lib Dems, who are trying to appear young, relevant and dynamic, chose Bournemouth, the place elderly people go to die, for their conference venue. Vince Cable made a plea for sensible grown-ups to unite to oppose Brexit, or failing that, for Lib Dem members to do so. And after the conference, the party released a video of Vince trying to look cool and winking at the camera, which jammed their phone lines as most people were worried that he'd had a stroke. It's one of the abiding mysteries of modern politics is why the Liberal Democrats haven't cut through more, Mark, because in a way this should have been their opportunity. I don't want to focus just on Brexit. What do you think, they're still relevant, or do you think they're a busted flat?
Well, this slightly remember. Clegg's stuffed them, hasn't he, for probably 60 or 70 years.
Mm.
I remember at the time when he trebled the tuition fees, especially it was quite pertinent to me at the time, with kids being the age they were. And I remember sort of various people, including Michael Portillo that night on his Daft programme, saying, oh, by the time of the next election, so this was, what was that, about 18 months into the parliament or something, yeah. Whatever it was. By the time of the next election, people will have forgotten all about this. I thought, what, really? Do you think people will be going, I seem to be £60,000 in debt, but I can't, why is that? I can't, what was it? Did we
spend
buy a load
on those English apples?
Yeah, exactly. What did we do? Did we have a holiday in Las Vegas? I can't remember. Of course people remember it, and they remember that he did all of that pledge, and it's not enough to have a pledge because people don't believe that, so I'm going to be sort of sacrificing things, my own blood, and written like some medieval sort of Viking type thing, you know, a pledge we will never ever do, and then doing the very opposite of the thing he pledged to do, and that stuffed them. And once you've then got a whole generation of people who go, oh no, I don't like them, it's hard to win it back, isn't it?
Well, also a whole generation of people who would have come into voting age and been trying to have higher education.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Within that 4 years that are going, oh no, now I can't do this because of the amount of money. I remember we did there was a sit-in at one of the universities, and we did a big gig, I think Tiernan organised, you know, with this kind of anti-tuition fee. And it was the big thing. Everyone went, yeah, we'll vote.
I did the pro-tuition.
You did the pro-tuition. Yeah,
I think people should pay for education. We made a lot of money, actually. It was great.
But yeah, that was the big problem. That's why lots, and similarly to the £350 million lie about the NHS, that was why a lot of people voted for the Lib Dems.
Clegg had a kind of justification for that in that the both manifestos theoretically get ripped up when a coalition deal is struck. But and that's probably what Portillo thought people would recognise.
Is there an argument that what we've seen with the Tories since the Lib Dems have gone is going to lead to a kind of feeling that, wow, maybe they did temper them a bit. Do you know what
I mean? That's
what
I'm trying to say. You don't know how much good we did in that time. Well, tell us. Give us a literal list of where you stopped things being as extreme as they could have been.
I'm sure he will once he gets his publishing deal.
But there's another story about William Hague going home to his wife after the coalition deal had been struck and saying to his wife, I think we might just have finished the Liberal Democrats.
What do you think the Liberal Democrats should have done? Do you think they should have not gone into... Because I don't know the answer to this.
They should have gone into coalition with Gordon Brown.
Do you think?
They should have done that.
Well, who unpopular with whom? It would have been the same Democratic mandate that coalition with the Tories, almost. The only people that would have gone nuts would be the Daily Mail. And if they could have ridden that out, they'd have been fine.
I wonder whether they should have gone into the coalition with the DUP.
I don't think they could afford it.
you need a magic money tree for that.
Anyone think Tim Farron might have done a better job? Because what you're talking about is being unable to disassociate themselves from decisions that were taken 7 years ago. I mean, albeit that the ramifications still impact.
There was some other baggage, wasn't there, with Tim Farron?
Yes.
Like the Rees-Mogg.
But he wasn't doing any business before he came out with his views on equal marriage and abortion.
But I suppose they're just trying to weather the storm, aren't they? Vince Cable's the kind of person you're just getting because he's a bit of a nice bloke, really.
He's too old.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a nice bloke.
He's too old.
Well,
what's he now? 73? 74?
He might even be older than that.
Robert McGarvey manages to run Zimbabwe.
What about a certain man called Nelson Mandela? He's very old.
But you can't say you're the party of the youth and
If I was to go for a pint with any of the party leaders, I'd definitely go Cable. I bet he'd be
You wouldn't go for a pint. You'd go for an early bird special, maybe. That's
not what I've heard. Not once he starts buying pills off a bloke in a ponytail in the toilet.
Vince Cable. Did you see the hat and the wink thing? Did you see that little footage of him doing that? Speaking of his age, someone called, actually, I think he's on The Mirror, Mikey Smith tweeted this week, fun fact, Sir Vince Cable is 4 years older than both India and the United States Air Force.
I think they should have gone with Lloyd George. He was a successful leader for them.
All right, didn't he?
Yeah.
Bring him back for a bit.
Nigel Farage is younger than Keanu Reeves.
No, he's not.
Well, we're playing this game.
Sorry, did you say younger or fitter?
Yeah, he's a few years younger. Farage is a few years younger than Keanu Reeves.
I mean, he's had a hard life, hasn't he?
I just realised I haven't seen Keanu Reeves in 20 years, so I don't really know.
Oh, you still would, Josh.
Still got it.
Definitely for the anecdote.
Oh yeah, you would. Of course,
of course. If I came in here and go, you're not going to believe what I did last night. Give you a clue: more rings than Nigel Farage. Oh. Oh.
This is Strong and Stable.
Finally, this week saw Donald Trump's former press secretary, Sean Spicer, take to the stage at the Emmys. This is a story. Surely the worst awards appearance since Joseph Goebbels' comedy cameo at the Hitler Youth Awards in 1933. I think that was known as the Addies at the time. Apparently the people who booked Spicer have also lined up Steve Bannon for the Grammys and Hurricane Irma for the Oscars. Still, at least actor Jason Isaacs called him a giant festering abscess. And surely when Lucius Malfoy thinks that you're the bad guy, you really are the bad guy. Although presumably Spicer would defend Malfoy by saying that he was just following Voldemort's orders. How did you three feel about this?
Because spicy.
He wasn't some sort of comedy sidekick. He was up front and centre punting stuff that was demonstrably untrue. And then fast forward 6 months, he's getting kissed by James Corden.
Where's Julian Clary?
That sounds like a euphemism, by the way.
Getting kissed by James Corden. No, he was literally kissed by James Corden, which I suppose is better than being fisted by Julian Clary.
It was Norman Lamont.
Yes, it was. What do you think, though?
Do you know what? I don't care.
Do you really not?
Because I have no interest in the Emmys. I just don't care about...
Is this about not being nominated for one, Josh?
What is their problem? Have they not got a best performance of the Glee Club category? No, I just... American awards ceremonies. I don't like.
Think of it as an embrace from the showbiz mainstream.
We act like the showbiz mainstream are this kind of wonderful moral compass and guardian. I mean, like, you know, it's Hollywood, isn't it? It's full of absolute wankers. What's the problem with one more?
You make a good point.
It makes a good case.
Waiting for who? Not Hollywood. Not a bad person in Hollywood. Whatever next?
But not only bad, but also arrogant and pretentious and somewhat obsessed with themselves rather than with the moral fortitude of the nation.
I think there might be a bit of entitlement in that room, just possibly.
What's he? They're just spoiling the whole night.
I hadn't thought of it this way round.
All these lovely people there that would just care to, that just exist just so they can help old blind ladies across the road. And then pops someone who's worked with Donald Trump.
To be honest, I think there's an argument that Sean Spice has lowered himself by doing the Emmys.
Who, in this country, if you were... Because that could happen, right? So yeah. It's not that inconceivable. You'd be at some sort of function or something... And up pops someone or other. Who would
I'm
you sort
polite.
Of go?
I'm too polite. Yeah. That's the problem. Like the things.
Is there anyone you would go?
I don't know that there is a British equivalent.
If you knew how I've given 5 stars to some of the worst Uber drivers in the world, I am the politest man. Like I think like you. No, I wish that I could go. Do you know what? If I met bloody Theresa May, I would tell her what I think of her. But if I met Theresa May, I'd go. Oh, it's a pleasure, you know, because, you know...
I do. I mean, it's not just the British thing either. It's a human thing. Yeah, you don't know. Very few people go out looking for animosity and aggro.
No, exactly. I don't know. Have you ever...
Oh, no, I wouldn't. There are people. I wouldn't be in the same... You know, I just politely sort of... I walked past George Osborne the other day because his office is in the Independence...
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
it's standard.
One of his 7 offices.
I could have gone. Oh, you and we're all in it together. Well, bollocks to you, Mr. Tory Chancellor. That's what I think of you and your austerity, and I doubt very much whether it would have made any difference.
But it was an invitation. It was a choreographed invitation. It wasn't passing in a corridor.
You might have gone on Osborne's list to chop up and put in a freezer. Freezer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, I don't want.
I think it's a problem. Yeah, I do think it's a problem. You know, when Melissa McCarthy's playing him on SNL, it is satire and they are exposing the lies and making fun of him. But him being up there is him being embraced.
That's
him being allowed to speak.
Exactly
like one is a, you know, one is
and
a piece of satire
and
the other is a hateful person at a podium, hateful asshole at a podium being given, you know, and then he'll do the after dinner circuit and then he'll just be, you know, so I think making a joke of like very, very dangerous figures, which has happened historically with people like Gaddafi as well. You know, once you make this isn't it we could sort of cozy up to him and it's a fun and here he is with his tent and while all of this is going on this kind of circus and Sean Spicer being part of that and doing a jokey speech and getting laughs and being in with everyone is part of that same was he good? I'd give him a 5 at the Comedy Store.
I didn't see it.
If it was like...
Did he smash it?
If it was... If we had the sort of television we had now in the 1940s, there'd be a programme on which, we've got Hitler to come on as a guest. It would happen, wouldn't it? And he'd all be, you know, and there'd be sort of a few people goose-stepping and stuff, and it'd all be a bit of a...
He'd be the host of Good Morning Britain.
I think you'll find he'd have a show on... I think you'll find he'd have a show on LBC, actually. Yeah.
Do you know what? I would watch it. Someone from Corrie being interviewed by Hitler, you would watch it.
Oh, yeah, while Susanna Reid sat next to him looking a little bit disgruntled and uncomfortable, but it's all in the contract, what can I do?
We've got someone in from the Isle of Wight who's very uncomfortable with their son going to school with someone who changes uniforms.
Tweet us, let us know what you think.
Fault Sadoff.
I'm going to leave you with the
good on Twitter.
The full text of that Instagram post from Jason Isaacs, who found himself in the room, and I think is a little closer to Tiff perhaps than to Josh on this one. He wrote, hoping to forget politics for one night and bask in other people's glory at the Netflix Emmys party, and who do I spot at the bar late at night but the poisonous purveyor of lies, Sean Spicer. What were the Emmys thinking celebrating this modern-day Goebbels, who was the thuggish face of Orwellian doublespeak just moments ago? 3 surprising things about him. 1, he comes about up to my nipples. 2, he doesn't think he should hide himself under a rock from shame for the rest of his life. And 3, he's deeply unattractive from the inside out. He has the aura of a giant festering abscess. Strange, since he was so charismatic at that elevated podium.
Oh, he's won me round.
I'd agree with him on all but one point. No one goes to an awards ceremony to bask in other people's glory. You lost me there, Jason.
Yeah.
You're listening to Strong and Stable.
Let's round off this week's fun and games with our traditional quiz. Who said it this week? Who called Boris Johnson a Poundland Donald Trump?
Great work, whoever it was. But I don't know.
I'll give you a visual clue.
Is it?
Okay. Oh, Cable.
I just mimed putting a hat on for the benefits of the tape.
Yeah.
I mimed winking and
didn't he
and
nick
doffing.
It off Russell Brand?
Yeah, Russell Brand did it best Poundland. With Farage. Yeah.
Enoch Powell.
Oh, that was right.
Or Oswald Mosley.
So
Oswald Mosley across. Was it Oswald Mosley or Enoch Powell?
I thought it was Powell.
It might have been, but it was across the question time table. Right. Brilliant stuff. Tiff, who described working with whom as like being stuck in a cage with a demented gorilla?
Sorry about that, Tiff.
Yeah, that was Josh and I when we did Mock the Week. Well, it's a really rough record, that one.
They shouldn't have brought out the cage. It was unfair. It's the only way to stop us walking forwards.
Did Nick Clegg on working with David Cameron in coalition government? Wow. I missed that. I dig that. And finally, for you, Josh, who said, "Fue un placer conocerte. Es mejor que no los digamos de lo que estábamos hablando. No lo entendería. Muy buen juego en el partido el domingo."
Jeremy Corbyn.
Beautifully played. Give us the context.
He was ordering tapas.
Why was he speaking Spanish?
I don't know, but I just heard
to annoy
in your intro.
Piers Morgan, wasn't it?
Really? You don't, I mean, it was brilliant. He was talking to Hector Bellerin, the Arsenal player,
what
at the party. Party, the kind of parties you hate. And Piers Morgan, they were talking in English, I think, and Piers Morgan came over trying to join in.
Oh,
so Jeremy
wow,
Corbyn just started
brilliant.
Speaking fluent Spanish to Bellerin. And then complained
so
about
that,
it on Twitter.
See, he is funny.
So what party is Hector Bellerin, Piers Morgan and Jeremy Corbyn invited?
My house party, and I'm really sorry, guys. I just... It
4
was,
a.m.
It was
a thing. Only three left.
It was a thing
Bozzers
for the,
and Nige were there.
It was a thing for the local allotments. And there's just been some really unusual people there going down, growing like radishes and that. And
presumably,
and that's what that said. I didn't expect to see you here.
Look at the size of my marrow.
Marvellous asparagus.
I think it might have been the GQ Awards. Possibly, or something like that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's why it happened. Jeremy Corbyn spoke in Spanish so that he could blank Piers Morgan, a story which has now led to a massive global increase in demand for Spanish lessons.
The joke's on him because Hector Bellerin's Portuguese, so he understood none of it.
And that is it. On that bombshell. That's it from us for this week. A huge thank you to our guests Mark Steele, Tiff Stevenson and Josh Widdicombe. Thanks also to Jan Ravens and Jonathan Pye. Thanks also to writers Andrea Mann, Robin Flavel, Karen Dickinson and Andrew Doyle. And thank you most of all to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Please don't forget to comment, like, tweet, etc. And listen out for the bonus Extra Strong, Extra Stable on Monday, only on Deezer. I've been James O'Brien, and we'll see you again next Friday when the show will be hosted by Sean Spicer. Goodbye.
Yes! Love Sean Spicer.
That was Strong and Stable. We'll catch you next time. Please subscribe.
Deezer. Originals.